Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the PBSC podcast. This is episode 224. And as you'll see from the title, should we consider a quote sex fast? And if so, how do we not become disconnected in the process?
Dun, dun, dun. Lightning flash.
Yeah, this is, it's been a long time since we did anything on this topic, and we had a PBSC listener write into us who's facing a situation where this aspect is part of what they're facing as a coupleship. They've been in a relationship for about 3.5 years. She point blank asked him one day, a couple of months ago, do you look at porn? Mm. And he's been hiding that fact, compulsive pornography and compulsive masturbation the entire time of their relationship. And she hit him point blank, and good for him. He was honest and he faced it and actually got a therapist and got into recovery. And he's really been working hard on stuff. But the thing that's come up, which, and this is often very common, he's, of course, he says he's been sober for 61 days sober from porn and masturbation. And also what's happened in the relationship is that sex is off the table. She's not interested in that right now. And of course, all of the betrayal trauma and the pain and all of the, the blindsiding that she experienced after 3.5 years of a relationship. And then this coming out, you can imagine why that's changed, the whole dynamic of their intimacy. But his question comes in that he's having several challenges. One, he admits that he's avoided any kind of hard or awkward conversations about anything in their relationship. So now we're talking about confronting this whole conversation about their sexual relationship, which is, we'll talk in a minute about why that can be the hardest part. And he is trying to stay sober. And so with sex off the table in the relationship, he's finding that to be a challenge. And also he is trying to be sensitive to her betrayal trauma healing. He doesn't want to pressure her for sex. He's actually saying he's avoiding talking about it at all because it might be construed as pressuring if there's any conversation about sex, period. And so he's asked his therapist what the therapist advises. And the therapist, mentioned a couple of really good things to open up the dialogue, that there's kind of a balancing act, a negotiation that takes place in a relationship in this regard. And he was having trouble with his therapist's recommendations, said that he doesn't know that he agrees with them. So he wrote in to ask what we think. And so we thought this would be a really good time to talk about this topic in general. right? The concept of a sex fast or a reboot, it's often called, and just how this whole sexual side of the relationship, you know, what is it? Why does it tend to be so dysfunctional? Why is communication around it so difficult? And what does it look like to become healthy? So we're gonna dive into that today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a tough thing to navigate, right? I mean, there's lots of dimensions to, I mean, like Mark is kind of leading to here. I mean, we suck as a culture at talking about sex. Let me just like be real. People, it's shocking how difficult people struggle to talk about a topic that's so universal. I was talking to somebody about this just the other day, you know. Sex might be the most universal topic like on the planet. Everybody has sex, everybody results from sex, right? Like, I mean, it's like this huge integral part of people's worlds, but those in the conservative sphere get really awkward about it. Those in non-conservative spheres oftentimes become really crass and demeaning with it. Other people are just joking with it or make light of it. People really struggle across the board in our experience to just talk about physical intimacy. Like, that's
well, and it's crazy because a lot of people would think today, well, we've become a very, you know, sexualized culture. We don't have the hangups of our parents or grandparents that went before us. This is a totally sexually open culture now, and everything's great. Well, except that Steve and I are in the trenches with all of you on a daily basis. And we see many of the same kinds of issues that we've seen happening for generations. Do they look a little different? Yeah. Is the dialogue a little different? It is, but there's still this big disconnect when it comes to authentic, open, vulnerable, healthy dialogue about our sexual relationship. It still doesn't happen in most cases.
We could do a whole month-long special on Dare to Connect, you know, three groups a week for 4 weeks, no problem, on just the differences between sex and intimacy alone.
I mean, oh my gosh. Yeah. Just that all by itself.
Right. And so we won't jump into that too much, but we do just globally as a culture, again, across the board. I don't really care. It's shocking how much people have sex, but how much they are terrible at navigating the subject, like on an emotionally vulnerable level in lots of ways.
And Steve, you and I asked a question as we prepared for this. Why do we think that is? Like, why the disconnect?
I think it's for a couple of reasons. I think on the conservative side, I think for a lot of people, and this ties into, I think, a chapter in our book that you and I wrote, The Pornography Paradox, several years ago. I think one of the things that I said in there was, just because something is quote unquote sacred to a person, does it also need to be quote unquote secret? Because I know many conservatives or those who reference from conservative mindset or upbringing, Mark and I would fall into that dynamic. That's very much what it was. Sex was like this taboo topic that it just had this mystique about it because nobody ever frickin' talked about it at all. And it was like, this is a sacred, solemn thing. So you can't, you know, and that, of course, was a catalyst for all sorts of issues that Mark and I were subject to, as well as lots of others that we weren't. And so I think that happens on that side.
Well, also on that side, then when it was talked about, it was we need to have a talk.
Oh yeah. It was always like so serious and solemn.
Talk. Right.
All the time. Well, and then on the other side, right? Because I have friends who operate in very different other circles too. And my experience on the other side of it is kind of the other end of the spectrum, where oftentimes, again, these are, not everyone falls into this, but I think the vast majority of culture tends to fall into these two categories. It's either that side or this other side of where it's this extremely sexualized culture where sex has just been very distanced from intimacy, if that makes sense. And so people will talk about sex like crazy, but either it's either A, in a really crass way, or B, in just a very emotionally distanced way.
And this will sound strange. The culture is really good at talking about sex in a non-intimate way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that happens all the time, right? And so there's a fairly small group, I think, of people who are able to really navigate this in a very, healthy place, and to navigate this in a way that is going to be, going to resonate, I think, for for not just themselves and in a coupleship, but frankly, this awkwardness is something that we've all, like Mark said, we've been passing this on from generation to generation for like since the beginning of time. It seems
And we thought the answer was to just become totally sexually open and, you know, sex crazed, and that would solve the whole communication intimacy issue. And it didn't.
Yes.
It just looks different. And the thing that hit me about this guy is, so you take all that we just said, which is already a huge problem for nearly every relationship, and now you add into it sexual betrayal and infidelity. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh boy, we took something that was already a big problem and we multiplied it like tenfold.
Yep.
Right. And you added a note here, you know, when we said, you know, someone say, well, it was just porn. This guy was just doing porn and masturbation. Well, for nearly all of the partners we work with, that is infidelity. And I know there's a big argument out there and a big debate about, you know, what is faithful and what is not. Right. But nearly all the partners we work with, that's in the same category.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. So yeah, we want to kind of explore this today, both this as we jump in, because we're derailing off into just the awkwardness of the topic. We need to get to the topic.
Even more derailing into the awkwardness of the topic.
Because it's easy just to get stuck in that whole dichotomy. But yeah, if we look at this for what it really is, right, I guess we should just briefly, really quickly outline what a sex fast is, and we'll just keep this really fast. So if we're talking about a sex fast, what it is far more than just taking a break from sex. Okay. Sex fasts are something that we typically navigate as therapists with couples that we're working with for a variety of reasons. Sex fast can be taken, for example, on the part of a guy who's struggling with addiction and sexual compulsion. The goal is obviously not to eliminate sex from the marriage in the long term, but sex fast can be really helpful for an addict in the short term of distancing one's own sexuality from dysfunctional elements or triggers. So for example, the impulsivity surrounding sex that oftentimes addicts struggle with, emphasizing and placing and in many ways sort of forcing the relationship or pressuring the man or the guy who's struggling with addiction to find other ways to connect, right? When we cut off that avenue of outlet, it oftentimes can help to place healthy pressure on the relationship to force an emphasis on the non-sexual or non-physical components of a relationship and increasing and balancing out the intimacy that way, right? In a relationship that has become either sexually too top-heavy or the sexuality has become overemphasized at the cost of connecting on an emotional level.
Well, and I love what you're saying. You know, one of the things this guy says, how do I balance staying sober with suddenly not having, you know, the sexual part of the relationship? And one of the things, what do we say, you know, sobriety isn't the whole of, you know, sobriety and recovery do not necessarily intertwine with you. You can be sober and not be in recovery. However, we do need to have a period of time where we're not going to these old sexual outlets in order to, for the brain to begin to rewire. You know, we talk about the rewiring of your arousal template, which has become so twisted and messed up over, you know, decades of being in this sexualized culture. You've got to have a period of sobriety to reset and to reboot personally in recovery, but also in the relationship, right? Because Steve, one of the things you and I talk about as part of this solution is the coupleship at a place where you are really open and willing to begin to have an authentic, raw, and real dialogue about our sexual relationship. Mm-hmm. And for one of the things we've talked about so often here is, are you willing to talk about what sex has become for you as an addict? What does sex mean to me? Right? Is it, for example, one of the questions I love that you often ask, Steve, is sex a quote need? And we emphasize need, not want, but is it a need? And particularly, is that, how do you see that in your relationship going forward? Am I needy in this area of sexuality? And I know in my sexual addiction, pornography, masturbation, and other sexual outlets absolutely became a desperate need. I needed them as my way to cope with life. I needed them as a way to not deal with hard things. I needed them as an escape and an avoidance, and a way to feel some sense of connection and intimacy that I wasn't willing to pay the price to get in healthy ways. Mm-hmm. So what is that for you? Right? What, and what is authentic? And boy, as I just said that coming out of my mouth, I thought that is a real mouth. What is authentic to me? If you had asked me years ago, Mark, what is sexually authentic to you? I may have thought that I had the ready answer, but you know what? I was clueless about what was sexually authentic for me. I didn't know because it was all so twisted and messed up inside of me. What is an authentically healthy sexual relationship? I couldn't have answered that. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a great question for people to look at. Do they even know what being sexually authentic means?
For sure. Well, and one of the questions that this gentleman centered on, because we want to talk about this topic in general, but also get answer his questions kind of in the process. And one of the big ones that he has is, you know, essentially my therapist, he says, in his extended version of this question, he says, essentially my therapist has recommended, you know, I've tried to kind of give her some distance and some space because of the betrayal. You know, I'm trying to kind of let her kind of lead the rein, you know, take the reins in terms of kind of like what we talk about on this podcast all the time. You know, I'm trying to kind of give her space around this and recognize it's a sensitive topic. And, you know, we maybe, you know, need to take this off the table, or maybe I need to turn it over more to her so that she's not feeling pressure from me about sex. He's like, I really miss it, but I don't want to be pressuring her. Right. And I think the therapist that he's working with, and one of the concerns he has is that the therapist is more or less kind of telling him, according to him, is that, well, your needs are just as important to her as hers are. And so you need to make sure that you're expressing those, which I think on the one hand is really good advice. On the other hand, there is a part of the dynamic between a coupleship that Mark and I oftentimes see when we're working, having specialized in this for a long time, that spouses really struggle with, especially because in a perfect world, that approach would be great, assuming that your traumatized spouse has gotten really good at their own boundaries, at advocating for themselves, and you guys have really good communication between the two of you and are able to understand what the other one is saying. Mm. What we oftentimes run into problem-wise with this is that either because the spouse doesn't have the capacity to find her voice in a healthy way, or because of a breakdown in trust in the relationship where there's a lot of mind reading going on between intentions, oftentimes spouses can mistake a guy sincerely saying, hey, I miss sex with you, but it's really okay. And they can infer that as like a pity approach, right? Of like, oh no, it's fine, babe, but it's okay if we don't have sex. I'll just be over here hating my life until, you know, you're able to have sex with me.
Well, it was interesting because he indicated kind of any, if I try to approach her about any discussion about our physical intimacy, any dialogue at all will be interpreted as pressuring. And you can, so you can see how the dialogue around talking about our sexual relationship, how narrowed it's become over time, right? If I talk about it at all, that's pressuring. So we can't have a dialogue. So he said, we just don't talk about it at all. And he said he already has a hard time with difficult conversations to begin with. And so now you enter into this realm.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely. So that's some. So just a couple points to cover that before we shift gears back. The thought that kind of came to mind for me was, one, I think this therapist, again, I think that there is an element that's on the right track, but you do have to keep in mind and be aware of those factors, right? Not that you can control how your spouse is going to interpret you. But again, if the trust is low, or if you guys are struggling with communication, which is pretty common during the betrayal early stages, if you are going to convey to her that, hey, I and be authentic, which we're always about here, hey, I miss sex, but I really understand and I get it, and there are probably good reasons for this, you leading out in whatever ways are appropriate for that, whether it's you potentially considering a boundary around maybe we just make an agreement for now, boundary wise, that you're the one who initiates sex for a while. That could be an option, which we talk about with our clients sometimes. Or if there's another way for you to authentically convey that in a way that she's going to understand that, look, I'm being real with you about my feelings, but I am taking care of me and learning how to do that in healthy ways. So yeah, you don't need to emotionally manage that for me or sexually manage that for me. I think if whatever way that's conveyed, that's important. And as always, anytime you guys are in therapy, and we would say this to everyone listening here, a good therapist should be someone who is is always giving you the best advice possible, but should always be defaulting back to, look, my job is to give you the best counseling, the best counsel, the best advice, the best, you know, the facts, the research, all that stuff possible, but always honoring your authenticity and your agency and recognizing that, right, this is your relationship. And even though I may be an expert that you're paying for time and experience for, I'm not the one who's going to be in this marriage for forever. You are.
Right.
Right. And so making sure that you want to always be taking that feedback in, but make sure that you're also putting yourself out there in a way that says, you know, I, at the end of the day, this has got to be something that I decide, which it sounds like this guy is doing, just throwing that out there for everybody.
Yeah. And a number of years ago when I remember we did a podcast on something similar and we got this really impassioned, pretty angry response that came through the communication on PBSC. And this guy said, if you're suggesting a sexless marriage, I will have nothing to do with that. Right. He was really passionate about it. And that really plays into what you're saying, Steve. We're not here issuing ultimatums or what is supposed to be good for every person. What we're inviting everyone to do is you've got to decide, are we willing to open up this dialogue? And Steve, you've used a term that I always liked. Are we ready? Okay, we get physically naked with each other, but what level are we at in getting emotionally naked with each other? And do we realize that the one has to precede the other if we're wanting our physical relationship to be at the highest level it can? Where is our emotional nakedness? Are we willing to really get open and vulnerable and awkward and authentic about talking about this? And are we willing to keep that going on a regular basis? You can't get to where a lot of people want to get to without, as you say, getting emotionally naked. And I would encourage people to take those two parts of your relationship and put them side by side and say, where are they? Here's where we are with physical sex and nakedness, but where are we with the emotional and with the spiritual and with all the other areas of intimacy? Where are those in comparison to this one piece of the intimacy puzzle? Are we holistic or are we narrowed and only pieces and parts of this are working? These are all crucial questions to start asking.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and as I, oh gosh, there's so much to say on this topic. This is the struggle, right?
It's a huge topic.
Trying to convey this in a brief podcast.
I wanted to say one other thing.
Please.
This is a huge question that some of my early mentors started to have me look at this and I really resisted it hard. But we would encourage every partnership listening here to start to ask these kinds of questions. What role has sex played for each of you and your relationship in the past? What role has sex had for you personally and in the relationship? What have you been asking of sex in your relationship? I know what it was for me. Sex for me was the be-all, end-all to gauge where our relationship was or was not. I would turn to sex with my wife to fix everything, to connect us, to make up for a big blowout we just had with each other. Sex was the be-all, end-all, the thing that glued the relationship together. It was the primary deal. If it was good, relationship's good. If it's not, it's not. And I would encourage everyone listening to really, if you've not had this talk, to sit down and say, where is that for us? What have we been asking of sex in our relationship? And has that been reasonable? Are we asking way more of it than it could ever deliver? Or is what we've been asking of it healthy or unhealthy? Is there anything that needs to change with that ask? Right? Crucial questions that so few people talk about.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's... There's a whole dynamic here that relies so much on, I mean, you can see we're kind of dancing around it, but there's a dynamic here that relies so much on just the transparency and the vulnerability in the coupleship, right? And in the internal dialogue. Because it's not just this societal issue that we started off with here about talk. It's shocking how many couples I work with, for example, that have sex all the time, but you ask them to sit in a room and just have a vulnerable conversation about it. And it's like, what? I don't know. I want to do that. And I'll look at him. I'll be like, you know, you have five kids. Clearly you're not unfamiliar with the process. I'm like, what does this mean? What does this represent to you? Right. There's a whole discussion to be had about what sexuality means for each person in a partnership.
Yes.
Right. What does it represent? And there, because that is also key to, for example, understanding her trauma better would just be one facet of that. Right. It's difficult for me as an addict to even begin to wrap my head around her betrayal unless I know what the hell sex means to her.
Yes.
When we get in bed together, what does that mean to you? What does that convey? What does that represent? Here's what that means for me. Here's what that conveys. Right. And that's just a whole subtopic. And gosh, we do subtopics all the time, guys, in a place that you, we would love to have you come. It's the sexual equivalent of the Cheers bar where everybody knows your name. We'd love to have you come and join us on the Dare to Connect program for addict spouses and couples. DareToConnectNow.com. Come grab a 2-week free trial. We'd love to explore many of these little subtopics with you around sexuality and other things.
We were just talking about this today in our addict session.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's funny how it always seems to tie back to what we're working on. There's just this huge web, right?
And here's what happens. And I hope everyone listening will really hear this. If we don't have an open, raw, vulnerable dialogue like we're talking about, what happens? Assumptions get made.
Yes.
We assume that the other person is feeling this way or that way. We guess. We mind read.
Yep.
And that's where, you know, like, I don't know if this guy did this, but I've done this in the past, and a lot of my clients, as yours, Steve, a guy will decide that for his sobriety, he needs to take sex off the table. But he doesn't talk with his partner about it.
Mm-hmm.
He just makes his decision and starts doing it. And now she's suddenly realizing things have changed. She doesn't know what's going on. They didn't talk about it in the beginning. And it all starts to fall apart because of assumptions, mind reading, and dysfunction, et cetera.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have a reboot or a reset or a sex fast or whatever, please, please don't just launch into it.
No.
Sit down. Have an open dialogue, plan it together, say, okay, if we were to do this, why would we do it? What are our expectations about what this will bring us?
Yes.
What's the plan for it? Right. Mm-hmm. You and I, Steve, take couples all the time. Will we continue sleeping in the same bed? Is all physical intimacy off the table? What are the boundaries that are going to be around that? Do we still kiss? Do we still do this? Right. This is a very involved process.
Well, what's the process for bringing physicality back in?
Right. How do
you? Because sex fast should never be long term, ever.
No.
Right.
No. How do we start to reintroduce the physical aspects back into the process? This isn't just have sex or not have sex.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like disclosure. Well, we sat down and I just vomited up on you all of my past sexual indiscretions, and now we're good. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked at length about formal disclosure. Well, there is a great formality and process and plan and dialogue around some kind of a sex fast or a reboot. You right? Just don't leap into it and hope it goes well.
Yeah, absolutely. No, for sure. Well, gosh, guys, there's so much to cover on this topic. So we could just go on all day. We wish nothing but the best for you couples as you navigate difficult topics like this. And again, we'd love to have you come join us in D2C so that we can kind of guide you in real time with questions. We get these. In fact, it's interesting. We just recently started, you know, D2C Academy, which is our advanced self-study courses dimension of Dare to Connect. In addition to all the live stuff that we have and the pre-recorded stuff, now we've got these self-study courses for people to take. And course number two, that we're going to be starting working on here in a couple of months and releasing it is all things healthy sexuality. So
yeah, we did our first advanced course on preparing for formal disclosure. Yep. And now the big request coming from a lot of our D2C people, would you help us with this healthy sexuality issue? We're like, oh boy, that's going to be an advanced course.
Yes, sure. And so we would love to have you come over there. Mark, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you wanted to make sure this is just such a humongous topic.
It's a giant topic.
You want to make sure we cover before we wrap up?
Hopefully we did, an adequate job at least covering some of the basics.
For sure.
again, my invitation to all listening is just open up this dialogue somehow. Yes, baby steps, sure. Starting to dare to lean into the uncomfortable. Just, you've got to start the dialogue and then keep it going. Mm-hmm. Keep it going. And just refuse to go back into that old place of awkwardness and, you know, we don't really talk and all the rest of it. If you're looking to make a change here, just start.
Yeah, that's great. It's great advice. And the dialogue, guys, we couldn't say anything else other more important other than that is keep the talking going and don't make this a one-time conversation.
No, oh don't do like it was when I was a kid. We need to have the talk.
We discussed sex last decade. Why are we bringing this up again? You know, right. We work with couples who, one of my favorite quotes is from a sitcom that Mark and I both love. And it's from an older gentleman in the show. And it just demonstrates so well the old generation approach to this versus the new. Sex is between you and the person you're doing it to, is how we used to talk about it on the show. And it's one of the funniest parts of the whole show because it is just so emblematic of where we've been versus where we need to go. So.
Yeah. I had an older guy I worked with years ago where his wife was just wanted him to talk to her and express to her his feelings. And he just couldn't do it. And he finally said, well, I told her I loved her when we got married. If anything changes, I'll let her know.
Right. I have not given an update since then. So surely it should be the same.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, guys, have a great rest of your day. If you would like something addressed on the podcast, I'll be it briefly in a few months, since we are backlogged on questions, you're welcome to send those in at the contact form at the bottom of pbscpodcast.com. And again, thank you for all your patronage. We love and appreciate all of you as we just hit, we're either hitting this week or next week, we'll be hitting 800,000 downloads on the podcast, which is great. So thank all of you. We appreciate having you here, and we will catch you all next week.
All right. See you then.
Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.